You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, and listeners, we have got a very special guest for you. I said it might be on the cards. We did talk about it on the 2022 preview show, and I have tracked him down, none other than the man with the most incredible cross-country record, Ryan Wood. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nicole.
It is good to have you with us. Now, listeners, just to put it into context, and Ryan, prepare to blush, because this is quite honestly an amazing, amazing record. So if we go back to 2018, and this is what we wanted to talk to you a little bit more detail about today, we're going to hopefully find the secrets of your success. But going back to 2018, you had 114 runs cross country, 114 clear rounds. 2019, you had 126 cross country rounds. That was national and international, 123 clears. Across national and international competition. 2020, 76 from 77. 2021, 77 from 77. And that was national and international. It is just extraordinary. So can we pick your brains, please, on sure. The secrets of cross-country reliability? Because the listeners and I are waiting with bated breath as to how we can find ourselves some kind of cross-country reliability, even just a fraction as good as that.
Okay, so they're pretty good statistics. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Nicole. I just started to think about the statistics after Equi Ratings did a post on it a couple of years back, and I didn't even realize that was happening. But just in general, my philosophy with training cross country is to just always be progressive, whether it's a young horse or an advanced horse. Start with baby steps every time I school them, and never put them in a situation where they're questioning me. And so when we get to the event, they've never questioned me in training, so they shouldn't hopefully question me at the competition.
I think that is very, very good advice in terms of, I guess, because if you're going into a competition and throwing them in at the deep end, then you're going to get surprises. So how much do you do cross-country wise as part of your training program?
Depending on what's going on, the start of the season, we're in Aiken, South Carolina. We have an incredible facility here, owned by Karen and Margie Simpson, great supporters of mine, and we've created a great cross-country field where it can get a good base on them without having to put them on a trailer and leave the farm. So we would do that once a week, not a huge school, but just touching on different things. We've got a water jump, bank, ditches, and a bunch of portables, guinea fences, and moving them in different locations and different lines, keeping it fresh, but having regular schools that aren't that intense. So it's consistency without jumping the legs off them, and so that just becomes a little bit of a normal thing for them to see and do, and it's not a big surprise when they go to the event. We do a little bit more in the winter than the rest of the year. Once we sort of get to our first event, we've done a lot of the homework, so it's just maintaining that throughout the season.
I love the little and often approach, because that, or you know, it is so tempting to build it up in our minds is to putting so much pressure on an individual school. But actually, if you put so much pressure on it, the horse is going to feel the pressure. And actually, that's when the wheels can start to fall off just a little bit.
Yeah. And I think that can happen when you go to all this effort to schedule a cross-country school off the farm, and you're going to a venue, you're paying a fee to the facility, and then you might be paying a instructor to help you, and you feel like you have to get your money's worth and do every jump on the farm. And that can be a little bit of the mindset created from that situation. So I'm lucky enough to be able to do it in my backyard, so it's not that, don't have that pressure to, this is maybe the only time I can school this month. So I think that can be a correlation to maybe the general idea of going cross-country schooling.
I guess though, that because obviously, you know, it's totally realistic that actually you might go and school off the farm and have an instructor and that kind of thing. And that is a big deal. And therefore you want to get your money's worth out of it, so to speak. But I guess even if you haven't got facilities at home, you can coordinate some different bits and pieces into your hacking that just kind of bring those sort of natural obstacles. You know, if you're able to head out from your barn and take in the odd ditch or the odd stream or anything like that, then actually that can be as effective as what you're saying and what you were able to do at home.
For sure. And to put your horse in different situations, but always in a progressive way. So he's confident in everything that he's doing, and confidence is key.
It absolutely is. And what about when you are producing the young horses? Because are you a fan of starting them sort of without a rider on in terms of over the natural obstacles in the schooling fields, or do you always prefer to be part of that?
I do that. It's not something that I do with every horse. It's a really good way to introduce cross country to a horse that's maybe a little extra careful. And I've had great results doing that with some foreign bred horses, European horses that are more jumper bred. And so they've got that really careful instinct, and they've figured it out on the lunge rope and have got self-confidence in what they're doing without having to worry about the rider dictating what they're doing. They gain confidence that way. And then when the rider gets on, it's ready to go. So I've had really good success with that with the horses that I've done it on, but it's not something I necessarily do with every horse.
If it's right for them, then you'll do it. And what about the sort of what you look for in a young horse? Because you're extremely, extremely well respected for producing and selling a lot of very, very good young horses. You obviously have a lot of success on both national and international circuit as well. So is there something in particular you look for in your young horses, characteristics wise, breeding wise, temperament wise, that you feel attributes to that success? Or are you simply looking for a horse with a good brain, and that's the most important priority for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. If you went through my stable, you'd see all shapes and sizes, and there's not really a specific model that I go after. I think a good-minded horse is a huge priority. And then after that, they impress me in some way with their movement and their jump. And then if you've got that quality with a good mind, then you're halfway there, and you just got to put the mileage on then. It's pretty simple, and it's not anything set in stone. It's a feeling that you get when you see them, and they impress you in one way or another, and you take a shine to that, and then you can work with that. And if you've got a little bit of extra jump and movement, that's always a bonus. But I think the mind is huge, and if you can have a horse that is really trainable, you can get the maximum out of them.
That makes a lot of sense. And in terms of your setup, how many horses have you got in at the moment?
Around 25 is the number that we work with. It sort of varies with horses coming in for sale and that type of thing. But yeah, average is 25.
And in terms of your season, plans for 2022, obviously down in, did you say you were in Carolina at the moment?
Yes, we're in South Carolina in Aiken.
And so what's the plan for the sort of the early part of the season?
We'll have the young horses going out to their first event this coming weekend at Sporting Days. And we've got five horses going there. And then the following weekend is Pine Top. And that's when the older horses will have their first run, the intermediate and prelim for their first run of the season. And then we'll get going from there. So Pine Top again. The following 2 weeks is the advanced Pine Top. We'll do Stableview International and then head home to Pennsylvania. And there's Fair Hill just around the corner. We'll be aiming for that. And then Bromont is our big international. We'll be bringing some first-timers to the two-star level up through to the four-star. So we'll have a bunch of horses aiming for Bromont, which is a favourite event of ours.
I was going to say it'll be good to have Bromont back. And actually, I think you've had a good deal of success there before as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a lucky event for me. And also, it's an incredible cross-country venue, and it is one of my favourite events to ride at. Very challenging with the boldness and the terrain, as well as the technical course. It sets them up brilliantly for the next level.
Is that something that you would very much think about when you're moving your horses up through the levels? You know, the kind of the different terrain and testingness? I'm not even sure if testingness is a word. Yeah. Or maybe I'll pretend it's an English word. Nobody will believe me, but hey ho. I'll run with it, Ryan. You know, in terms of the level of difficulty of a particular track, is that something very much that you like to make sure that your horses have really been tested at the level at which they're comfortable before you step up?
Yeah, it will for sure be in the planning for the event to build them up to have that as a pinnacle of what we've been doing all spring. And then it'll be a testing event. It'll be challenging, but they'll also be very prepared to take that on. And I've had them come out of an event like that just feeling bulletproof and ready to go up to the next level. So it's definitely on the calendar for a reason, and the lead up events are planned out to get there well prepared.
Bulletproof in terms of cross country reliability, or as bulletproof as you can be, I think it is a really, really important one. Ryan, obviously you started your career over in Australia. How does eventing differ over in Australia compared to now in the US?
It was very different. So great local events, and the venues that we ride at now to where we grew up riding are quite different. Very simplistic back in Australia 20 years ago, but everything worked and got the job done. And it was a great way to grow up riding and eventing. In Australia, we'd have to travel quite a bit. There would be three events within 2 hours of where we were, and then from there, it would be nothing to drive 6-8 hours for a horse trial. So it would be a weekend away, be camping, and there'd be really good times.
A lot of fun in there as well. What about your sort of first superstar? Because the horse that really put you on the map and took you up to your first five star was a super Australian stock horse called Countdown. Tell us a bit about him and what it was like, because 19 is pretty young to make a five star debut.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to find him in the local paper. It's my first horse stepping up from a pony, and he went through Pony Club, and we got our taste of eventing there, and then went through all the internationals, the old long formats. He did two of every stars moving up, and then finished at a five-star long format at the age of, we're both actually 19 years old. He's an incredible horse at a massive heart, and he was probably the horse that gave me the confidence in cross-country riding.
He shaped you in that respect. And what about making the move? Because we've seen others do it. Philip Dutton, I know he's been a massive influence in your career. Boyd Martin as well. What gave you the push to jump from Australia and obviously set up a life over in the US?
I came over to compete at Kentucky in 2007 and then went home to equine influenza, which shut down the equine industry nationwide. So there was absolutely nothing going on. If you were transporting a horse without a permit, you went to prison. It was that serious. So that was a real boost to go and do something overseas, because there wasn't much going on in Australia and we were unsure of how long that was going to be. It really crippled a lot of businesses in the racing, eventing, all the equestrian sports. So if I was going to do it, there wasn't going to be a better time. So we sold everything and moved to America.
Mate, you make it sound so simple. Made the leap, and it has certainly been a successful leap. Look, it has been the most incredible journey to this day. And I hope, you know, this is another question actually I was going to ask you. When we were talking about your cross-country record, do you feel pressure around it? Because there's people like me who make a big deal about it, and it is incredible and it deserves to be celebrated. But do you ever think of it, or is it very much parked firmly in the corner of your mind as a nice to have, but not, you know?
Yeah, it's just what I do. I'm going out there prepared finish clear. It's not something that I'm thinking that I any different to what I always am thinking, is just to be prepared and give the horse the best experience I can.
Be prepared and give the horse the best experience you can. There you go, listeners. Two very, very, very top tips from Ryan. Ryan, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to have you on the show. And thank you for indulging what is the most incredible cross-country record. Long may it continue.
Thanks, Nicole. Good talking with you.
Listeners, we hope you've enjoyed it too. Don't forget to stay tuned for more coming soon on the USCA official podcast. Thanks for listening to the USCA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.